right, who would have known Weezer and God have something in common? They both want you to take time off, an island in the sun, a little time to go, a little bit of breathing room. My name's Kurt. It's great to have you here this morning. We're in week two of this series called Live More, as Eric said a few moments ago. And if this is your first week with us, I want to catch us up a little bit here in a moment. Before we do that, this right here has been really fascinating. This created all kinds of discussion last week. I had people come up to me and they're like, man, I really enjoyed your teaching last week, Kurt. I went home and I cleaned my closet. And I'm like, you know, that is fantastic. Man, it's awesome that you went home and cleaned your closet. Somebody else cleaned up their trunk. I said, you know, that's great. That's not really what the teaching was about. But I'm so glad you enjoyed it and you actually cleaned something up. And yet, you know, it's one of those things, just out of curiosity, just confession moment, how many of us have a room like this right here? A trunk of our car, the back seat, the attic, the garage. Keep your hands up. How many of you are perfectly comfortable with it that way? Awesome. Now, just one more question. How many of you look at this closet and you think, I could go shopping still? There is more room there. See, that's why you're here today. That's why all of us are here, because I could care less. Fortunately, I could really care less about your closet, the backseat of your car, but I don't want our lives to look this way. I don't want our schedules to look this way. I don't want our finances, our spending to look this way, or our relationships to be so crammed full that it's all about just efficiency when it comes to our relationships. And so, you know, we're talking about this whole idea of finding margin, being able to go and actually have a time to just rest and not be always at our limits. And just so we're on the same page, last week we defined margin as the space between our current pace and our limits. The distance between the current pace of our spending, as we'll look at next weekend, and our limits. The current space today with our schedule and our limits. And it's really interesting because some of us are learning for the first time that we actually have limits. We can redline in certain areas of our life. Just because we think we can do it all, we actually can't. We hit a point where we can't do anymore. And what is more importantly is that we find ourselves doing so much that we don't enjoy anything that we're actually doing. And so the cool thing about this is God actually has something to say about this. And it doesn't really matter if you're religious or Christian or not. This is really for everybody. I mean, it's one of those things that, if you're not a Christian, this is a great motivational talk for you today. And you can take some things away. And if you're a Christian, this is something that's really not an option. This is a mandate that God gives to us. And so in the ancient book, the Bible, God talks about this. In fact, when he was forming his first nation, exactly the way he wanted it to be, the nation of Israel, the Israelites had been in slavery. That's all they had known. And so he puts these laws into place to basically tell them, this is exactly how I want you to live. And there were 600 and some odd laws, all kinds of them we looked at last week. And then there was the top 10, the big 10. Some of us think they're the 10 highly suggested things you should do. He called them commandments. But one of those was this idea that you need to take a day off. Now, who doesn't love a God that says, take some time off? I mean, that's a great thing. Take some time to just breathe. And what he basically was saying is when the sun goes down, for 24 hours, you need to not go out and pick any more grapes off the vine, no more olives off the branches. Don't bring any more wheat in off the fields. Put your trade down, put your skills down for 24 hours, sun up to sundown, and you just need to have space to breathe, a little bit of margin in your lives. And so today, we're going to talk specifically about our time and about our schedule and the schedule that we keep, because you and I have this tendency to just add, to cram, and we find ourselves adding so much to our lives that we don't enjoy any of it. Now, here's how you know if you're in trouble when it comes to your schedule. You begin to say things like this. You'll say, I think I'm going to be about 15 minutes late to this meeting. All right? I may need to leave 15 minutes early. Or you're like, honey, exactly when in the recital are you performing? 7, 8, because I really, the other 32 girls, I don't like them or their music, but I want to be there for you. I want to be able to say, man, honey, you did a great job, because you try to cram it all and you want to move on to the next thing. Or when you're at home, you're saying things like, man, I really should be working right now. And then when you're at work, you're saying things like, man, I really should be at home right now. And you got your kids going in 100 different directions all the time. Or if you're single, you can't say no to anybody of anything that they request of you. And then later on, as you're getting ready to do that thing somebody has asked of you, you're like, oh, you regret that you even have to do it. See, we have this way of adding so much into our lives. And so today, I want to help us not end up at that place if we're not there already. Or if we are there, to identify some ways to actually back out of that and create some margin. So I'm super excited about this. We're going to talk about one big application, one big idea today. And this is something that literally, get ready for this, is pastor talk. This could change your life, all right? I know you hear that, but this is really true, all right? This is not a real spiritual thing. It's just true. Because in case you haven't figured this out already, your time is your life. As your schedule goes, your life goes. So when we change how we use our time, when we change our schedule, we actually change our life. And so we're going to be getting this big pearl of wisdom. We're going to get this big pearl of wisdom from a guy by the name of Moses today. And so if you have an iPad, iPod, you know, Android device, your, an actual physical Bible, you can turn to Psalm chapter 90. We're going to look at, spend a lot of time there this morning. And you might think of David when it comes to the Psalms. This one was actually written by a guy by the name of Moses. And here's why you should listen to this, all right? Some of you are going, why should I listen to Moses? What does Moses have to say about time management? Well, he actually has a lot to say. Here, one thing is that he lived 120 years. He's a lot more perspective than you and I will ever have. And something else fascinating in the Bible, this really has nothing to do with anything, but there's this little tidbit that they put in there, and it's one of the reasons that I really believe the Bible is true. You know, sometimes you say, well, you know, I don't read the Bible because I don't really believe the Bible. Well, just think about that logically for a moment. You know, why do you read things? You read things to determine if they're true or not, right? So, I mean, you should dive into the Bible a little bit. So this little tidbit, and people don't just, like, put stuff like this in just to make it up. So it says of Moses, he was 120 years old, and he could still see well. They just thought you needed to know that, all right? I mean, it's like, for most of us at 30, we're like, huh? You know, but it's like at 120, he could see really well. And so here's what makes Moses fascinating, right? Moses had four lives, four segments of his life. The first was that he was born Hebrew, but he was raised Egyptian. So he was raised in Pharaoh's home. And so everything in his life from the beginning was going his way to plasma TV in every room, wherever he walked. I mean, it was, you know, he had everything. He lived in the home that was the superpower of the world at that point in Egypt. And he lived with Pharaoh. He had everything he needed. And then one day he fell out of graces, good graces with Pharaoh, because he murdered some dude. And so he was kind of excommunicated from the home. And so he went into the second segment of his life, which was being a shepherd. All right, talk about slow days. All right, being a shepherd, you'd wake up in the morning. You'd take the sheep out into the pasture. You'd sit down and you'd watch the sun go up. And then you'd watch the sun go all the way across the sky. And you'd watch the sky and the sun dip under the horizon, and then you'd take your sheep into the pen, you'd go to sleep, and you'd just do it all over again. I mean, for Moses, I mean, this is, and this, he thought, man, this is it. I lost my chance. I was excommunicated because I murdered some dude. I lost my chance. I'm a shepherd. And he thought this was all his life was going to end up. Nobody's going to know Moses. He's just going to be a little blip in time. That was the second segment. Third segment is he was back in Egypt. He was back in Egypt. Remember this whole segment if you read your Bible? You really should read your Bible. It's fascinating. All right, you read your Bible, you hear this phrase, let my people go. Remember that phrase? Let my people go. This all this pestilence and turmoil and tension going on. And all of a sudden now, Moses is God's mouthpiece for the nation of Israel, God's chosen people. Kind of humorous, because if you remember anything about Moses, Moses didn't speak well. He had kind of a stuttering problem. And so, you know, it's kind of like God's humor. Why would you put a stuttering person as God's mouthpiece? But that's what God did. And so, you know, Moses finds himself kind of at the epicenter of this major world event as there's this face-off between him and Pharaoh. And he says, Moses, you know, Pharaoh, let my people go, which throws him into the fourth segment of his life, the leader of a nation. And so he, you know, goes up face-to-face with Pharaoh and says, let my people go. And, you know, and he begins marching the Israelites out of the land of Egypt. And they're going out into this place that God only knows, really. God only knows, because he's like, I'm going to show you where it is. I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to show you when you get there. It's called the Promised Land. And so they're marching out of Egypt, and the Israelites are grumbling. They've been in, all they've known ever in their life is slavery. And so now they're free, and yet they're grumbling because they don't have any food, and the walk is long. And God gets angry at this Israelite people for grumbling. So here's what he says to Moses. God says, Moses, I'm going to have you lead them around in circles for 40 years until they all die off. Wonderful. What a great way to spend the next 40 years of my life. And so he's raised in the home of Pharaoh, has everything he could possibly need. Then he's a shepherd for 40 years. And then he's Mr. Somebody at the middle of this big epic event in world history. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's leading these people out into this place called the Promised Land. And they get to the Promised Land, get to the edge of the Promised Land. And all of a sudden, the people start going into this place that God has finally showed them. And Moses gets ready to step inside. And God says, oh, Moses, hang on a second. You can't go in there. I was like, what do you mean? I'm Moses. I'm the one that, you know, brought these people to this place. It's like hundreds of thousands of people Moses has led to this point. He's like, you can't go in there. And Moses is like, what do you mean? He's like, Moses, I can't let you in there. And there's all kinds of reasons for another time. But he says, here's what I'm going to let you do. I'm going to let you go over here and climb up on this mountain. And I'm going to let you look into the Promised Land. This is why it was important that his eyesight was still so good at 120 years. He's like, I'm going to let you look into this. So you talk about somebody that has a perspective on time. I mean, Moses understands time. And in the 90th Psalm, we find, you know, just this context for reality and for every decision that you and I make in our lives. And you don't have to be Christian to embrace this. You don't have to be religious. I mean, this is just a good snippet. So we're going to look at this Old Testament insight. Stunning what Moses says right here. And the words are a little tricky because they're translated from Hebrew into English. And they get a little confusing at times. So I'm going to read along. And then at the end, there's this powerful, powerful punchline. So Psalm 90. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. He's basically talking about the nation of Israel. He's like, God, we kind of live and exist through who you are. Then he says, before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world. I mean, he's a creationist, so he's speaking in that way. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. So he's kind of like one of those arrows that has those lines have an arrow on both ends. He's like, you're everlasting to everlasting. You're, you know, the bookends of everlasting to everlasting. In the middle of that is me, Moses, just a little blip in time, and this nation of Israel. We find our identity in you. And then he goes on, he says this incredible statement, you turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. Now, is that not like the greatest Gandalf statement of the Old Testament right there? Return to dust, you shall not. Come on. No, nobody's a fan of Lord of the Rings. All right. So, you know, it's like that moment right there. You know, return to dust. He says, and for us, we're offended by that. We're like, man, he's like, return us to dust. He's like killing us off. And see, we struggle with this. Moses didn't struggle with this, but we struggle with this a bit. We struggle with this idea of, you know, what does that mean? Does that mean like God kills people? I mean, does that mean like God causes or allows those things to happen? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, does that mean that God knows exactly how many days I'm going to live? Or does it mean he knows that, you know, he can decide how many days I'm going to live? I don't know. I mean, it's one of the two, but we struggle with this. And here's what's important with this, though. See, we have a hard time putting into words here, but whether you recognize it or not, I think most of us believe, Christian, non-Christian, religious, not religious, most of us believe that God has something to do with the length of our lives. And you might say, I'm not sure about that. Let me prove it to you. Here's how we know. If your doctor were to tell you today, you have 12 weeks to live, you have a terminal illness, you have 12 weeks to live, would you pray? Now, maybe you've never prayed. Maybe you haven't prayed in a long time. But if most of us were told that, or we were told one of our loved ones had 12 weeks or less to live, one of our first responses would be, oh, God, or oh, my God. I mean, that might be as much of a prayer as you're able to get out. See, I think for many of us, we, even though we may not acknowledge it regularly, at the core of us, we believe God in some way controls the length of our life. He continues. 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or a watch. A watch is like 3 hours, like a watch in the night. In other words, Moses, he's saying, wow, you know, I keep saying, man, the years are just flying by. I mean, it's like here goes another year, and here goes another year, and before I know it, 10 years have gone by. But he's like, God, in your grand scheme of life, what seems to be a big deal to me, and this seems to be a really big deal in my life, and yet to you, like 1,000 years to me is like just like a three-hour watch to you. I mean, it's like I get all jacked up thinking my life is important, but it's just like a blip in time. Is you sweep people away in the sleep of death, and they are like, and now he's talking to you, and he's talking about you and me here. He says, it's like we're the new grass of the morning. Kind of like, oh, that new baby was just, I saw a brand new baby, a couple weeks old this morning. Oh, brand new babies, well, you got your whole life in front of you. He's like, they are like the new grass in the morning, where it springs up in the morning. We're like, oh, man, you got 80, 70, 80, 90 years in front of you. But he says, by afternoon time, by the evening, it's dry and withered, and he actually says it dies. And so in a minute, he's going to say, you know, we might get 70 years, we might get 80 years. Seems like a long time to us. Moses, you got 120 years. He's way more perspective than you and I have. And what he's really saying, he's saying, God, I guess from your perspective, I mean, I get all, you know, man, this is my life, and I got this expanse. My life, the context of my life is my life, but to you, my context compared to you, everlasting to everlasting, I'm like a blip. I'm just like a moment, an itty-bitty slice of eternity in your space. Isn't this exciting? Isn't this motivating? Aren't you glad you came to church? Find out you're a blip in time? All right, so he goes on. He says, our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures, and yet the best of them, he's now talking about you're in my years, yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow. See, if you've got a lot of trouble and sorrow in your life, Moses is like, man, let me tell you a story. 40 years I sat out watching sheep in the fields, and then I was in the middle of this pestilence and turmoil and leading, let my people go, and a blood river, and then I got to the edge of the promised land, and God's like, you can't go in there. And what was it, by the way, that you said you have sorrow and trouble in your life with? Sometimes we think it's all about me. Nobody else gets this. You know, just think of Moses, all right? And sometimes we're like, Moses, I mean, how can you still say God is good with all that you've been through? And Moses is like, whoa, don't lose faith. Don't lose faith. Don't get overcome and dwarfed by the magnitude of who God is. Don't get dwarfed by the brevity of your life compared to God. Don't lose faith in this. He says, for they pass quickly, meaning the years, and we fly away. And this next part's really tricky. He says, if only we knew, in other words, if only we could understand, or if only we could comprehend, if only we knew the power of your anger, your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. Now that just seems like a poorly constructed sentence right there, doesn't it? I mean, it's like three ideas and none of them are really finished and words dropped out. But you see, this is where the Hebrew translated into the English gets really complicated. A lot of translations have tried to capture the heart of this. Let me tell you what it means, not exactly what it says. So this is what it means. What this means right here is if we could see who God is, we would be more careful with how we use the allotted time we've been given. Meaning, if we could see who God is, he's, you know, the bookends of eternity to eternity, everlasting to everlasting, and we realize we're just like a blade of grass. It's up in the morning, and by the end of the day, it's withered and it dies. If we really could understand that we only have an allotted amount of time, that we might take a little more intentionality when it comes to how we use our time, wouldn't we? I mean, it takes Moses to point this out to us. It takes Moses to say, hey, let me give you a little context. The context for your life isn't your life. It's actually everlasting to everlasting. And you're just a blip, just an itty-bitty point in this time, in this timeline. And every now and then, we need to pause and contemplate the brevity of life. Because when we do that, we contemplate the brevity of life, we begin to realize, man, my days are limited. And if my days are limited, then maybe I'd be a little more intentional with how I use my time. Now we come to the application. Here's what he says. He says, teach us. He says, teach us, because see, this is something we don't normally do naturally. He says, teach us to number our days. Another way to say that is, teach us to live as if our days are numbered. Now, I this just was brought to light to me again. I mean, I know this, I get this, but 2 weeks ago, my wife and I were sitting at our oldest daughter's fifth grade kind of award ceremony at school. She was singing in the choir, and I sat in this these bleachers in this auditorium, this gymnasium setting, and I just looked down at her, and I thought, man, where have the years gone? I mean, she used to be this tall, and then she went to kindergarten, and now, you know, she's like 6 years through school, including kindergarten. She's almost halfway done, and it just hit me. I have 7 years left with her, and all of a sudden, you know, I began to realize her days are numbered with us. How do I want to use? I mean, when I begin to see our days are numbered, I begin to ask the question, what does my schedule look like? I mean, we live as if, you know, we have unlimited days. We live as if our kids are always going to be with us. We live as if, you know, our spouse or our partner is always going to be with us. We live as if, you know, we're always going to have them. They're always going to have us. But, you know, Moses says, no, don't. If you're living that way, you're actually wrong. That's actually a bad way to live. You need to live as if you have a limited number of days. When you realize the brevity of your life, we need to order our days and really be intentional with the days that have been allotted for us. Teach us to number our days, and then here's the promise to this. There's actually a promise. It's teach us to number our days that, meaning this goes somewhere. If you do this, it actually takes us somewhere. It leads to something. That we may, are you ready? You may gain a heart of wisdom. May gain a heart of wisdom. So if you live as if your days are not numbered, you will live filling your days with stuff that at the end of your life, when you don't have any health left, you're going to wish that you wouldn't have filled your life with. That's what he's saying. And when you begin to number your days, you immediately, as we're going to see in just a moment, you begin to immediately begin to say, man, I need to add this into my days if I only have a limited number of days. Man, this thing right here, this is not important at all. I need to remove that from my life. Or maybe I need to turn this up a little bit, or I need to turn this down a little bit. I think we immediately begin to see when we number our days that the important things begin to rise to the top. So backing out of this passage a little bit, here's kind of the big idea. Here's the application. Here's the summary statement, the one idea that Moses is going after here. And I've been actually carrying this in my pocket the last few days, and you've got one of these as well in your weekly. This is a statement: my time is limited, so I need to limit how I spend my time. My time is limited, so I need to limit how I spend my time. Now, I'm going to do you a big favor this morning. All right, and some of you're thinking, Kurt, how much more time are you going to go? I mean, you're kind of talking in circles here, and you're like doing this, and you're like saying to your spouse, like, if there's one of those response songs, can we kind of like just exit to the parking lot, kind of escape? Because you're like, I need to be on to the next thing. Well, it's good you're here, because you need to hear this. I'm going to do you a favor by actually taking you to the end of your life. I'm going to fast forward all of our lives to the end, and you're going to see instantaneously and almost immediately, you're going to gain some wisdom by some of the things I share with you. And this is wisdom that you normally wouldn't get until you're at the end, until you're in your final days. And if you can bring that back to where you are today, to the current stage of your life, I believe you're going to have a ton more wisdom. As Moses just said, you're going to be taught, and you're going to have a heart of wisdom in terms of how to use your time. All right, Bronnie Ware. Bronnie Ware was an Australian nurse. She was an Australian hospice nurse. In fact, Bronnie would spend her time living with patients, men and women, in the last 12 weeks of their lives. Oftentimes, it was even less than the last 12 weeks. She'd be called in when hospice was called in, and she'd live with them for anywhere from 12, but usually more like 3 or 4, sometimes just a few days. And Bronnie Ware, she was, you know, over the course of a number of years, was serving these men and women in a hospice setting. She began to ask them a question. She began to say, you know, what is your regret, any regrets that you have about your life? She'd say, you know, if there's anything you could do different with your life, what would it be? And as you can imagine, she began to see a pattern in the responses that she was getting. And so she began to write these things down. In fact, she's put them in memoirs, and I think they're actually turning into a book, or maybe you're already in a book. And so she began to write these things down. I'm going to give these to you today. I'm going to give you the top 2 regrets that she heard from men and women in their dying days. All right, and so I'm going to give them to you, number 2 first, and then the top reason. The second one is one you think would be the first one, but it's not. Number 2 regret: I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Now, that's nothing new, right? I mean, we've all heard that before. We all said, oh, man, I wish I wouldn't work so hard. Maybe you've had a grandparent say that. But look at what she wrote about this. She said, this came from every male patient that I nursed. Man, take note. This came from every male patient that I nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Women also spoke of this regret, but most were from an older generation. Many of the female patients had not been breadwinners. All of the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of a work existence. You can thank me for that later. There you have it. That's it right there. And it's interesting, you know what this means, men and women too, because for many of us, many of you as women, not us as women, many of you as women, you know, you live on the treadmill of a work existence as well. And what this means is that if we don't learn to number our days, if we misspend our time at the end, we will actually have avoidable regrets. See, there's going to be a time in your life where you can't get all that time back. You only get to like live through your 20s once. You only get to live through your 30s once. You only get to live through your 40s like twice. Right? I mean, you're 39. You're like indefinitely 39 for the rest of your life. But you know, you see, we live as if it's, you know, we have an infinite amount of time. But this is so important. Listen to this. This right here comes from men and women who are numbering their days because they can't avoid any longer the reality that their days are numbered. 12 weeks left, 6 weeks left. This comes from men and women who can't avoid the reality any longer that their days are numbered. And all of a sudden, there's some wisdom right there. We're saying, man, what if my days were numbered? They are. They are. You just don't know how many there are left, but they are numbered. Number one regret. Before I share this one with you, I know we've got some students in the room. We got some college students, high school students, grad students. If you've checked out over the last few minutes, I want you to tune back in. This is critically important for you at your age. You gotta get this one right off. Number one regret. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. This was a staggering reality she bumped into right here. Look at what else she said. She said this was the most common regret of all. When people feel like their life is almost over and they look back clearly at it, it's easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Most people had not honored even a half of their dreams and had to die knowing it was due. And look at this right here. Knowing it was due to choices they had made or not made. And then this last phrase is so powerful. Health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it. I've just done you a favor. I've just fast-forwarded your life to the end, and now you have the wisdom that comes with living as if your days are numbered. And the question that we have to wrestle through now is, what do we do with that? I mean, as I look at my schedule, as I look at my life this week, because your life is your schedule, as you look at this, you know, what is it about your current schedule or your current pace that if you were at the end of your life, you'd say, you know, I don't know that I need this to be in there. Or man, there's something glaringly missing right here. I mean, what would you do if you understood there is very little left, that you have a very allotted time left in your life, and there's very little space between your current pace and your limits? What would you change in that? Moses said, Lord, give us the wisdom. Teach us. Teach us to have a heart of wisdom so we can use our allotted time to the fullest extent possible. Now, I know there's pushback on this. There's all kinds of pushback. I push back on this. Listen, my life is just like yours. I just get to talk on weekends, all right? I'm just as full, just as crazy. You know, I'm drawn in just as many ways. And yet, there's all kinds of pushback that we give on this. Here's what I'll hear, you know. But Kurt, if I don't do as much as I possibly can, I'll never make it. What's it? You got to figure out what's it, all right? I mean, you're like, I don't know. I just know I won't make it. You need to figure out what it is, all right? Do you know what Bronnie would say if she were here today? She'd say, you need to figure out what it is, because you might get to the end of your life when your health is failing, and you may figure out you've been chasing the wrong it your whole life. So you and I have the potential to chase the wrong it, and we have to figure out what is it, all right? You know, and here's where a lot of it comes from. A lot of it comes from our parents. Maybe you had parents who were wildly successful, and you're intimidated by how successful they are. And so you're like, man, I'm not going to make it if I'm not just always going like they were. Or maybe you had parents who were on the opposite. They were wild failures. And you're just like, you're like, I definitely don't want to be that. So you're constantly going because you got to make it. Or maybe your parents were just, you know, mildly boring, right in the middle, and you're like, there was nothing fun about that. I mean, parents can't win, right? I mean, regardless of how they raised you, it's like it never was the right thing, right? See, somewhere along the way, you and I decided what it is, and we began to go after it. You got to figure out what is it. Here's another one. If I don't do as much as I possibly can, I'm going to fall behind. Who are you falling behind? What are you falling behind? You know, what is it in our culture that you've so bought into that you're like, if it's not exactly this way and my life doesn't look exactly like this, then I have not made it. Well, what is that? I mean, what is it that your kids have to, you know, be so involved in all the time? What is it that they're going to fall behind? You know, what is it from a career end that you're measuring yourself up with or towards that if you don't, you know, do all this stuff or stay engaged and work the extra hours, you're going to fall behind? See, the who or the what, you need an answer to that question. Who or what are you falling behind? If you don't have an answer to that, we have to dig deep and say, okay, how is that driving my schedule and why? Why is it driving my schedule? Kurt, if I don't do as much as I possibly can, I'll be poor. Now, this doesn't apply to everybody. This applies to some of us. All right? And for some of you, this is a really big deal. But here's the thing. You've never defined what poor is. Is that poor financially? Is that poor in spirit? Is that poor in the quality of life? What is poor? I mean, what is that standard? And see, this gets real emotional for us. For some of us, it drives us because we maybe grew up poor. We're like, I don't want that, so I'm always going because I don't want to end up there. What's poor? You need to have an answer to that question. Here's another one. Kurt, if I don't do as much as I possibly can, I won't be accepted. By who? I mean, who is it that's like the master of accepting us, right? I mean, if you're a student or a college student, I want you to tune in again. If you've tuned out, your parents have told you this 100 times, but I know you don't listen to them, so you need to listen to me, all right? Here's what I want to say to you. The friends that you think you spend your time with right now that you think, man, if I don't do everything with them and what they want me to do, then I'm not going to be accepted. Listen, they're not going to be your friends in 10 years. All right, 5 years from now, you're going to have a different cell phone. They're going to have a different cell phone, probably a different number. You're not going to see them. And yet the things you're doing right now that may not be bad stuff, they may not be bad people, but all the ways that you go out and waste your time on weekends in ways that never really bring anything into your life or build anything into your life, things that take you away from more important things, all of that stuff is not really going to matter in 10 years. You got to trust me, all right? You got to trust me on this. I mean, we got to answer this question, you know, what is it? And students, here's the thing. Here's what I know about your life. Here's the most important thing in your life right now. It's your time. If you haven't figured it out, it's your time. It's your schedule. Your life is your time. Your life is your schedule. You need to ask yourself, what's driving my time? But Kurt, if I don't do as much as possible, I won't measure up. Again, who are we measuring up to? I mean, who is it that is so high on this pedestal that we're like, I've got to attain this? What's driving you? See, it's possible. We can get to the very end of our life, and we can be so busy filling our life with all of this stuff that in the end, we get to the stage of life where we begin to lose our health, and we begin to realize that there were all kinds of avoidable regrets. And we end up chasing something that we never defined. So I want to help you in this morning. So here's what we're going to do. In your weekly is a card that has this phrase, my time is limited, so I need to limit how I spend my time. And on the back of that, there's four lines, and I want you to, I want to give you some homework to do this week. And here's how you're going to use this. You're going to fill this out, and if you're married, I encourage you to talk to your spouse about what you write down here. If you're a student, I dare you to talk to your parents about what you've written down. If you have kids at home, talk with your kids about this. And here's what I want you to talk through. On the first line, I want you to write down, what do I need to add to my schedule that currently isn't there? If my time is limited, so I need to limit how I use my time, if I don't have my kids indefinitely, I mean, there's going to be a time where they're no longer under my care. If I realize there's going to be a time where I don't have my spouse or people or things are important to me around me, what is it right now in my life that's missing that I need to add in if my days are numbered? And then the second line, what you're going to put here is there anything in my life that I need to remove? If my days are numbered and I only have a limited amount of time, what do I need to remove from my life? And let me talk about this for a moment. This gets a little bit hard. Hopefully it's not like your brother or something. All right? That gets a little awkward. It's not mine, I can tell you that. So here's where it gets hard, because for some of you, you need to put a name there. For some of you, you need to put a string of initials right there on that second line. Because there may be a person in your life that just sucks the life out of you. That it's like they put a straw in your head and just suck it dry. All right? I mean, they just suck the life out of you. And it doesn't mean they're a bad person. Doesn't mean that they're bad people or what they're doing. It just means that when you walk away from that encounter or the amount of time you spend, you're just like, man, I could have done a lot of other stuff. And yet you keep doing it. And maybe when you begin to realize, I've only got a limited amount of time, you begin to make some distinctions and say, you know, I need to remove this. Maybe it's, if you're a couple, it's a couple you spend time with on the weekends. Maybe you spend time and there's nothing really that builds into your life. There's nothing positive that you walk away with. And I know it's not all about you, but if you consider I only have a limited amount of time and you regularly walk away and say, man, you know, that time could have been used in a whole different way, in a lot more beneficial way. Maybe you just need to write their initials here and you need to say, I need to make a change. On the third line, That's a greater than sign. What is it that needs to be turned up, needs to go up, needs to become greater in my life? What is it that I need to put more attention into? Maybe I'm putting some time into it right now, but if I have a limited amount of time and I'm saying, you know, that deserves more, you need to write that in there this week. And then the fourth line, you know, this is, what do I need less of? And maybe this isn't something you can remove completely. Maybe as a couple or a family, you spend way too much time in front of the television. Maybe you don't need to sell all your TVs, but you need to say, you know what, we're going to cut that down a little bit. We're going to pare that down. we need less of that in our lives. Maybe there's some hobbies, you know, like golf and hunting. I can always say that because I don't golf much and I can't stand hunting. So I can pick on those. Maybe you spend a lot of time, and maybe you don't want to remove those from your life, but maybe you're going to turn them down quite a bit. And you're going to say, you know what? If I'm going to turn something up, I've got to turn something down. Listen, the point of this right here, this is a game changer. This is a life changer right here. You're working through this. This actually will take you to a new place because your time is your life. Your schedule is your life. As your time goes, so your life goes. My time is limited. I need to limit how I use my time. Moses said, God, teach us. Teach us to gain a heart of wisdom. Help us to see that our time is very brief. So as we sit under this song here that PJ is going to play for us, I want you to just kind of reflect and spend a little time, like Moses encouraged, a little time reflecting on the brevity of life. And just saying, God, what is it that I need to write down right here? What is it that I need to do to begin to make a change, to change a trajectory in how my life is going so I can actually begin to find some margin and enjoy the things, enjoy the people, enjoy the relationships, the children that I have?